So we've got Lou Crisfield here, who's going to tell us about her experiences at Greenham. How old were you when you first went, Lou?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I think I must have been 15, 16,
I think.
So I think I was involved with a local CND group in Camberley in Surrey, and there were some pretty strong women in that group who all, you know, they all lived on council estates. It was quite a working class CND grouping compared to a lot of the other much more middle class ones that I came across at Greenham. Mm. And yeah, it was through them really that I first started going to Greenham, and I was still living at home and still at school. Yeah.
Cool. And what's the longest amount of time you spent there as a teenager?
Well, when I was a teenager, I didn't stay overnight, so I'd just be going to visit. And then it was when I left home. I think I'm getting this timeline right. I do get confused about timelines, but I guess when I left home, no, it wasn't even then. It was before I left home. I think it was when I started. I did a foundation course in art when I was 18. And that was in Farnham, and I used to go to Greenham and spend time at the weekends there. And then when I left home properly, I think it was between then, the summer when I left Farnham Art College, and then I moved to London, I moved into a squat, that I spent, you know, weeks on end at Greenham.
Really?
Yeah, so some, you know, probably 2 weeks would be the longest I'd spend at any one point, and then I would go.
And what gate were you at?
Orange.
Orange Gate.
I was always at Orange Gate, and I'm not entirely sure why.
What was the personality at Orange Gate? Because they all had their unique thing, didn't they?
It was very mellow.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was fun. There was a lot of fun going on. There wasn't. Obviously, it was very political, but you didn't feel that you would. In some gates, I felt a bit judged. Mm. Yellow Gate, for example. Mm. Blue Gate had a real sort of wild, fun, young, really rebellious personality, which I'd go and visit Blue Gate quite a lot, but sometimes it was too much for me. Sometimes I just wanted the mellowness of Orange Gate. Green Gate was sort of very much the sort of lesbian free love, and that was fun as well. But at the same time, Orange felt like a sort of refuge, really, from some of the wilder, some of the wilder elements and some of the more moralistic elements. You felt you could just be yourself at Orange.
Cool.
So that was a good place to be. And it was also quite pretty.
Yeah.
We were sort of had quite a nice sort of green space. Blue was just right on the on the gate itself, which was pretty out there and pretty relentless, constantly in contact with the military all the time, whereas Orange was a little bit set back.
It's a few little woods, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really pretty, and I really liked it there. And the personalities were great, so I'd struggle to remember people's names. There was a woman called Jill, who was an older woman who, well, no, she probably was in her 40s, maybe even 30s, but she felt much, much older than me. And I remember her singing songs and just teaching me an awful lot about activism and about feminism and about life. And then there was the owners of the brown van and a younger girl, a teenager, I think, called Di. And then there was another woman called Di. There was a whole lot of personalities. It was quite mixed in terms of class and in terms of age, which suited me really well as well. Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I chose it.
I remember the latrines in the shape of a women's symbol in the bushes.
Do you?
Do you remember that?
No! Yeah. Gosh, isn't it interesting what you remember and what you forget?
I had a dig 'em. Anyway.
Oh, you probably did, yes, absolutely.
But you did loads more than I did. You were on so many actions. And what sticks in your mind about the activism there?
So sometimes the activism was sort of a big thing that was organised from all the women, or even outside groups that would come in, and there would be a big action. You know, there was the holding the hands around the base and
embrace the base.
And then there were actions going out and stopping cruise missile convoys.
Yeah.
And there was a lot. I remember those quite vividly. at Yellow Gate, blockading the gate and stopping things coming out and coming in.
Yeah. And I remember doing that with you. We had to lie down and stuff.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And then there were the times which were much less mass actions. They were just smaller ones, like a few of us would get together and say, well, I just feel like going in and doing some damage to the base tonight. And so just feel the need, and then you would just cut a hole and in you'd go and see how far you could get.
What did you use? Bolt croppers?
Use bolt croppers.
Our trusty bolt croppers.
And other times you'd climb up over the top.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wasn't that hard to get in?
No, not really. Yeah. You could use carpets to go over the barbed wire.
Uh-huh. To climb up, put a carpet over, climb over the carpet.
Yeah.
Clever.
And, it was quite weird being inside.
Was it?
Yeah, it was very strange. It was, felt like a different world, because you're always on the outside of it and you get in and then you realise it was a bit, you know, humdrum really, just some roads and some buildings, but it still felt quite foreboding because you knew there were these weapons in there and you knew the purpose in there was really, really very evil. So it was quite odd going in there, and I went in a couple of times and did graffiti and came out again and wasn't caught. Mm-hmm. And then quite a few other times I was caught.
What graffiti did you do?
I think it probably was things like, you know, cruise missiles out or women's symbols. I can't really remember what we wrote. Yeah. It was nothing particularly special, sadly.
Oh, wow. Women's symbols, very special.
Yes. And I remember being held inside. They had sort of holding, they must have had them specially for us, sort of porter cabin type things. Oh. Where you'd be processed in there and then you'd have to wait for the transport and then the police would use the transport to take you out. And sometimes then you'd get driven into Newbury, into the police station there.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the first time you got nicked then.
I can't really remember because there were a number of times. And I'm not sure that the first time I was nicked was at Greenham. I think it might have been at Molesworth.
Oh, yes, of course.
But I think the first couple of times I got nicked, nothing really came of it. It never went any further. Yeah. And then the next few times I was held in Newbury Police Station overnight for maybe two or three nights sometimes because there wasn't enough room in Holloway.
Oh, I see.
Because it was often after some of the bigger mass actions. Yeah. And so it was quite weird. So instead of sentencing you to a prison sentence, you ended up sort of having it in the police cells. And I can't remember how they got away with that, whether that was actually sanctioned by a court or not. It's just too, I'm afraid it's too long ago to remember.
It doesn't matter, but as a teenager, it's pretty scary being locked up for two nights in the cop shop.
Yeah. And then there was the time when I did go to prison because I'd refused to pay the fine. So I was fined and I refused to pay it. And so I was then sentenced to, I think it must have been a month in prison, but I only spent 2 weeks, which is pretty standard.
Holloway Prison?
Well, in most prisons, I think you just serve half your sentence most of the time. So it was only 2 weeks. But I do remember feeling very frightened.
Yo.
Yeah. But I had my knitting with me. I had my books. Had my things ready.
And what was your cellmate like?
Well, that was interesting. So my cellmate was actually a skinhead who was very right wing.
Oh, nightmare.
So your idea of a total nightmare cellmate, but she was actually in for assaulting a police officer. So our mutual dislike of the police was something that we had in common.
Yeah.
And actually I got on quite well with her in the end. I think she was quite a frightened young woman.
Yeah.
So and actually, once you got into the swing of it at the prison, it was boring.
Really?
That was the main thing I remember. It was very dull. And I remember other women just being in terrible situations. You know, there was me who'd chosen to go to prison. I probably could have managed to get the money to pay the fine. My friends would have paid it.
Yeah.
But I'd chosen to go as a political act. And the other women in there hadn't, so they might be in there for stealing a pair of shoes, for stealing food, for minor drug offences, and it did feel like a really brutal way to treat people for such ridiculous things.
Yeah.
And you could tell that a lot of people were being drugged up, you know, to keep them quiet. There were tranquilized basically to control them, and it was a pretty brutal system. But I was treated fine. I went in under the name of Diana Spencer, because those days you could get away with pretending to be whoever you wanted to be, and the prison guards thought it was quite amusing. They'd curtsy to me. That was quite fun.
Diana Spencer.
Then my parents mucked it up rather by writing to Diana Spencer in prison but actually saying Dear Lou in the letter, not realising that the prison officers opened the letters first to read them.
Oh.
But there we go. Yeah. And then I guess... I do remember my first night in cells before. I remember I obviously wasn't ready at that point. Didn't have my knitting or my books. And I remember that I asked for some paper and a pen because I knew you could, and I made myself a whole set of playing cards.
Did you?
And played Patience. And they were quite beautiful. I spent a lot of time making them, drawing them. And then somebody brought me a book in, and that was the Adrian Mole book.
Oh.
And it's very short, and I had to read it over and over again. It was very boring.
Yeah.
I was very sick of it by the end. I wish somebody brought me War and Peace or something, but there we go. Better than nothing.
Was that in Newbury then? Or?
That was in Newbury, yeah.
So you were stuck in the police cells with nothing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, the tedium.
The tedium, absolutely the tedium. But there we go. You know, it's nothing compared to people who go to prison for a long time. One thing I do remember after being in prison was this feeling, which stayed with me until I guess until around 9/11, which was, if that's the worst they can do to me, I'm not scared. Mm. I'm not scared of breaking the law, of being arrested, or standing up for what I believe in. But then after 9/11, I think there is reason to be scared. You had things like, the extraordinary rendition, Guantanamo, all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And then I began to realise, no, the state can actually do a lot worse to you than put you in Holloway. Yeah. It could be an awful lot worse. Not that I've got anything to fear. I'm a white, middle-class woman, but other people have got a lot to fear.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a weird sort of transition from thinking that's the worst they can do to realising, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, but, it's still very brave to sort of put your liberty at stake like that for what you believe in. And what did sort of the other women at Orange Gate, did they support you in this? You said you went as a deliberate political act.
Mm.
What was the feeling?
Did
you have an affinity group or something for these actions? How did you
do I it? Didn't at that point. I think I had been involved in affinity groups when I'd lived in Camberley, when I was living at home, and in CND, and had gone and done actions at Molesworth. By the time I was at Green and Moore, no, I wasn't really in affinity groups. They supported me, and they were going to prison, and they were doing similar things. But I think by the time I actually did serve that sentence, I was more London-based. Yeah. I was getting involved in squatting campaigns, and I was slowly drifting away from Greenham, which is a bit sad, but...
Yeah. But you were serving your community, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember you used to pitch, didn't you?
Yes.
Tell me about your trip. How did you get to Greenham?
Well, when I lived in Camberley, I'd hitch out on the... It must have been in the M3, and then there was a way through to the M. I can't remember how I did it, but I definitely did it out of Camden. Then from London, go out to Gunnersbury.
Yeah,
I remember doing that. You came, didn't you? Yes. We go out to Gunnersbury, and you go out onto that big A road going out, the sort of dual carriageway and hitch. Yeah.
Did people picking you up, did they know you were going to Greenham?
No, not until you got in the car.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Sometimes you would gauge not to say, just saying you're going to go to Newbury or Reading.
Yeah.
And then other times you felt safe to say it and it was okay. I normally had good rides. Coming back was harder because you'd stink.
Mm-hmm.
Stink of wood smoke. And people would know exactly who you were back. Because the locals knew... Who was
around. Easy to get a lift back, or was it hard because of it?
Getting a lift back often was through the network of people who were just driving to London anyway, or supporters in Newbury. But I did hitch, and I got lifts in the end.
Yeah.
You know, in the end, maybe. Sometimes you get a bus.
Yeah,
it depended on money, really. But often there'd be supporters coming. There'd be a lot of sort of older women who'd come with food and drink, and often they'd give people lifts. They were lovely.
Yeah.
And men. Yeah, men coming too to visit.
Come for the day, then ride home and that.
Yeah. I remember I got a lift back with Bruce Kent once.
Who's Bruce Kent?
He was the head of C&D.
Oh, him. Yeah,
yes. And I think I just picked up two kittens, bizarrely, from Greenham, and took them back to London. And I think he was most perturbed. He didn't like cats. And I think I rather press ganged him into taking me home. Anyway.
You didn't like cats?
No. Two kittens. Which funny. I don't think were even in a proper box. I don't think he was very pleased.
So even though Greenham was women only, there were men there, like Bruce Kent and other people. And
they would come to visit.
They weren't allowed to stay overnight?
No, they weren't allowed to stay overnight.
And you thought that was a good plan, really?
Yes, I think I remember the decision. And we must have had discussions, we did, in the CND group in Camberley about it. And some people were upset about it, but I remember them being particularly upset about the reports in the papers about the used sanitary products being hung off the fence, which I thought actually at the time was quite hilarious. So that made me think, oh, that's all right.
Did that attract you to it?
It sort of did, because it was just grossing people out. Yeah. And I just thought, oh, come on, get over it. And I guess slowly I began, I don't know, the women-only thing made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could see the dynamics in political groups. You could see that women were being spoken over, and that when they had ideas, men were sort of trying to name them as their own, and women weren't confident enough to be politically active and have their voices heard when there were men around. Mm. And you saw how different it was when men were not around. And it wasn't so much that I thought women should live separately to men or organise separately to men in the long term. It was just, if this is the only way we can make our voices heard, that's how we have to do it.
Quite, yeah.
It was a tactic. Yeah. It was a sort of a growing tactic to get women on an equal footing to men, rather than a...
Build their confidence.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't about living a separatist world. Though I think some women, like I think Greengate, there was a lot of that.
Separatists,
yeah. Yes. And I didn't agree with them, but it didn't... Yeah.
Didn't fall out about it,
not at all, no. No.
Was there much schisms and splits between the gates? You said there was judgments and differences of opinions.
The big problem came, and I don't know whether, now looking back on it now, whether I read it all wrong. I might have done, because I have actually had some quite good interactions with King's Cross Women's Centre more recently.
Mm.
But when some people from the King's Cross Women's Centre became involved at Greenham, I do feel that some schisms opened up. With Yellowgate, yeah. And I don't know, I can't really explain it, but there was a very sort of moralistic tone going on, and that people were being asked to examine themselves in ways that were maybe right, maybe wrong, I don't know. But there certainly weren't discussions had in a sort of friendly, comradely manner that meant that people understood what they were getting at. It was very much attacking people and judging them. And when you do that, people become entrenched and they don't want to listen.
No.
And that is what happened.
Yeah.
And there was...
All the defensive.
Yeah, there was a bit of a split. And to tell the truth, I don't know how that was resolved, because I think I drifted off and got involved with other things. It was really...
The bad vibes, I suppose.
There was a time when you felt really uncomfortable even going to Yellowgate to get the water keyed for getting the water, which was a bit bad.
Different atmosphere.
Hmm. So I'm sure there'll be interviews with people from Yellowgate who have got completely different versions to say, so...
You don't think they were cops put into... Split everyone up?
Well, I wonder.
No, within the light of what we know.
I do wonder sometimes.
Cops, because that would be a good tactic, wouldn't it?
Send
an undercover cop in to make everyone fall out.
Absolutely.
That what they were doing in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were.
So it would be...
They were causing massive disruption. Mm. And I can't see that the state would have just, not had someone in there. Mm. But I'm not sure how much has come up in the spy cops inquiry on it yet. Mm. I don't think they've admitted to it yet, have they? Or maybe I think they might have admitted to it, but not said who.
Yeah, be good to know, wouldn't it?
It would be good to know, absolutely.
Mm. So, you put here something about squaddies?
Yes! Well, it's quite interesting. One of the questions seems to be, how did you get on with other men, maybe men who were visiting or the police or the military? And actually, police, no, you didn't get on with the police, and men visiting were fine, but that's not what it was about. But the military, obviously the sort of arresting officers and the higher echelons, no. But the squaddies, a lot of the men who were patrolling the perimeter fence had just been in Ireland or about to go to Ireland, because that was the active service that was happening then. There wasn't anything anywhere else. Yeah. And I think a lot of them were quite traumatised, and I think a lot of them were just working class young men who couldn't get apprenticeships, couldn't do anything else, and they ended up in the army. And I didn't see them as my enemy. And I think some of the gates they did, but we didn't. And certainly, certainly I remember Orange Gate and at Blue Gate, passing whiskey through the fence and just chatting to the guys.
And having a drink with them.
Having a drink with them.
On duty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hilarious. Yeah, passing drinks backwards and forwards and just engaging on
the
them.
Yeah.
Engaging with them as human beings and not seeing them as the people that were causing this. They were caught up in it just like we were. But I don't think some of the people who came to Greenham approved of that.
Did anybody have a romance with the squaddie, do you think?
Yes, I think someone did.
Tell me that.
Well, I can't really go in. I think somebody did, yeah. Yeah, I heard that she did, yeah.
How did she get away with it?
Well, I think she was moving away from Greenham at the time, but she did. Yeah,
they had romance blossom through the fence links.
Yeah, that's far as I know.
But he said he wanted to go for a drink Friday.
I think so. I'm not sure how it happened, but I did hear it happened. Yeah,
that's hysterical.
Yeah, and someone I did know. Yeah, which is quite funny. And why not?
Well, quite. I think that's great.
Yeah,
we're all human, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Somebody was asking about disabled women at the base, and I was thinking of Patty and her broken leg.
Oh, yes.
She was hopping around all winter with that cast on, wasn't she?
She was, gosh, yes. I mean, that would have been tough.
God, yes.
Because a lot of the life, and well, obviously you were sitting, were squatting round a fire. We didn't have seats, really. No. You were just...
The camping chair hadn't been invented, had
it? No, there were no camping chairs. Yeah. You were basically possibly sitting on a log or squatting on your haunches. A lot of the time, you were chopping wood, and then sleeping in really rough and ready tents that you knew were going to be removed the next morning by the bailiffs. Well, actually, you didn't know. It wasn't every morning. It was quite random. And you had to then be ready to move the whole of your camp for the eviction and then put it back up again, which was just so pointless. Yeah. Do you remember that happening?
I don't think it happened when I was there.
No.
I wasn't there very much.
It was a big feature, so it was when the bailiffs were going to come, somebody would shout, bailiffs, and then you'd have to sort of deal with the fire, put the food away, put your tents away and start getting ready for them to start removing everything and throwing it into the road, and then you'd have to rebuild the camp again after they'd gone.
Did you lose a lot of possessions in an eviction?
I don't think they took things away from what I remember. I think they just removed it off the land and put it into the road.
Oh, right.
I think that's what they did each time. I can't... Yeah. Again, it's so hard to remember. I remember a guy, an architect, designed a tent specifically for us.
Really?
And I think that was the precursor of the pop-up tents that we have now.
Who knew?
Yeah, so it's like a concertina type thing. It's sort of pushed together and you could put your arm through it and gather it up with the stuff in it and remove it. And it was specifically, he designed it for the Greenham Common Camps.
Well, who knew?
Yeah, so that was very clever.
Yeah.
So we were very pleased with those.
I bet. And did some... Who bought these tents for you? Who gave them to you? Is it the Quakers?
I think it must have been the Quakers, yeah, who ended up buying a load of them. Yeah.
I remember they got loads of tents and sleeping bags.
Yes, and then the Quakers meeting house, the Friends meeting house in Newbury, was the one place where you could get showers.
Yeah.
And get cups of tea. And yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They were a complete godsend. Well, that's what they'd say anyway. But they were really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great.
Oh, well, I mean, one of the reasons for doing this is so future activists can learn from the experience. So what do you say about this? How do you think it's impacted on, well, like, now activism today?
Yeah.
Because the cops have learned from Greenham. They show videos of Greenham.
Do they really?
To train their crowd control and things like that. So what have we learned from Greenham that...
I guess, what have we learned from Greenham? I guess one of the things about Greenham was that we learned from the older women, from their experience of stuff they'd done, and it might not have been within an activism context. It might have been within a union. It might have been, there were women coming from Wales as well, from the miners' strike support groups as well. Yeah. So there was all sorts of different experiences, and there was a real sort of passing down of ideas from older women to younger women, which was really cool. And I've always been so grateful for that.
Yes.
Really grateful for it, because I think it really moulded me and stopped me from going off on tangents.
Yes, like young people today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And stopped me thinking I knew it all. Which was really important, because I so didn't, and I so could have done. But I don't know about
ageism
tactics.
Ageism is a thing, isn't it? Especially when you're a teenager or early 20s. You don't want to talk to older women, really, do you?
But and I know, and I do find it a little bit depressing at the moment that there seems to be a sort of, what do they call it, third wave feminism, seems to be going off on tangents that are quite peculiar to me, and there doesn't seem to be enough engagement with... between the generations. But then maybe that's partly our fault for not trying hard enough to engage. Mm. I don't know. In terms of actual tactics, I guess that's probably the peace movement as a whole, isn't it? The affinity group tactics, the non-violent response. Not because you believe in non-violence itself, because I don't.
No.
I think I did at the time, but now I don't think I do believe that that's always the right way. But I think... when your enemy has more power than you have, it's probably the sensible thing to do, because you don't throw stones if someone's going to be
got a gun.
No. So where the power differential is like that, I think the peace movement and Greenham had it right.
Mm-hmm.
That your power is in numbers and tactics and ideas. And I also think the way that Greenham women were totally unafraid of destroying property.
Yes.
And it being a direct action against the actual things that were causing the problem, rather than being symbolic. It wasn't all about marches and banners. It was going in and actually disrupting what was going on, actually attacking the machine that was making these weapons or that was facilitating them and destroying property. And I think that's... we should all be doing that as much as we possibly can.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you broke into the base, what sort of thing would you have kind of broken?
Well, I mean, obviously the perimeter fence, it was sort of opening that up, and it was graffiti. And I think, you know, had people managed to get to the actual weapons or the actual planes, they would have smashed them up. And I think there was a bit of that sort of thing going on.
Great.
I never got that far. I know. But the Upper Hayford... people,
yeah.
They did that. They went in and smashed the aeroplanes, didn't they? Which I thought was an amazing thing to do.
Was that recently?
That was more recently, yeah.
Yeah. And they were older women as well.
They were, yeah. So that was new. And I think for a lot of the peace movement, they did find what the Green Women were doing to be quite shocking, because they believed non-violence meant respect for property as well. There was a lot of that sort of middle-class peace movement thing going on. And I think women at Greenham were like, no, it's not about that. Yeah, so that was cool. That was good.
Yeah.
And I think that we've learned from that.
Definitely. And you know, the it's all good, isn't it? So you said here that what was your relationship like with local residents?
Oh, yeah, that was not so great.
Tell us more about that.
Well, I guess you really got the feeling when you wandered around Newbury to go and buy food or whatever, that you'd really got nasty looks. People didn't want to interact with you at all. You'd sometimes get people shouting, you know, stinky lesbians or, what you know, some sort of insult, normally sexist. So it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But I say that, and at the same time, we did get lifts.
Mm-hmm.
We did manage to hitch, and obviously there were lots of wonderful people in Newbury who did really support us.
Yes.
But I think generally the problem with Newbury was, you know, I imagine the base provided a bit of employment, not massive amount, because it was mainly American personnel.
Yeah.
I think if it had been mainly British personnel, we'd have had an even harder time. But I think there might have been some resentment in the town about the Americans. But it did provide employment, and I imagine a lot of people had links and weren't too pleased with what we were doing.
Yeah.
And weren't too pleased that their town was associated with what they saw as a bunch of dirty, stinky lesbians.
Must have been a town of two camps, very much so.
It was. Yeah. It was, yeah.
Either for or against, wouldn't you?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
But, I mean, the good thing about it is there are no nuclear weapons there now.
I know, absolutely. And they did go. And I... Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it?
Mm.
And I think a lot of the reason why... I hope this isn't true, but I think it's partly to do because they were American. I think people resented Britain being used as a base by the Americans, and I think that's one of the reasons they went in the end. And I am really glad it went, and it's now common land, which is what we always said it should be.
Fantastic.
Which is marvellous. Absolutely. So, yeah, that was a bit of a victory.
Well, it is. If you take the bird's eye view, it is. Yeah. And what about the, you know, consciousness raising of all those women that never done anything before like that? Do you think that helped?
Yeah, totally.
Empowered people.
It definitely did, yeah. Absolutely. And not just did the consciousness raising sort of empower women, but I think the meeting of different diverse people at Greenham was very empowering.
Yes.
You were meeting people of different generations and different classes and different experiences, some from the cities, some from rural places.
Mm.
And that was really wonderful. Mm. Though I say it was diverse in that way, it was not diverse ethnically. It was very white.
Was it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it really was, which obviously wasn't good.
Mm.
And that was, I think, one of the things that the women at Yellowgate were trying to raise.
Yeah.
And I think they were right about that. But I'm not sure they had answers that made a lot of sense at the time. That was part of the problem. Another thing I remember, I just thought I'd say, is I do remember... I think it must have been the first... Was it the first bombing of Libya? Where the... weapons, I think the planes had gone out of Upper Hayford. I think that's right. And I remember sirens on the base at Greenham. I think they were on high alert. And I remember the panic and fear and just the horror of that. Being at the base when that was going on, it was just, that was just horrible.
Did you think this was it?
Well, to a certain extent, but just thinking that, you know, the reality was one of these bases, not that base, but another one, very similar, had been involved in the killing of an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
It's horrendous. Yeah. I remember that being, it really sort of knocking things home. Yeah.
The death.
Yeah, the death of women, children, men, you know, in our name. It's horrendous.
Yeah.
And reminding you why you were there and what you were doing it for. Yeah, very much so.
And did you keep in touch with many people from Orange Gate?
Or? Sadly, I didn't. There was one woman I did spend a lot of time with. She came and lived in Scots with us in London, Jane, who we did keep in contact for a long while, and she was wonderful. But I lost contact with her. I think she ended out in Cornwall or somewhere. I'm not quite sure what happened to her in the end. But interestingly, I have recently...
Is that Jane Hagg?
Yes.
Oh, I remember her.
Yes.
Tell us about Jane.
Oh, Jane was wonderful. She, when she came to London, she'd been so institutionalised at Greenham. She was trying to break away to a certain extent. And at least have some sort of other base. So we opened a squat for her on the same council estate that we were living on. And she just created a second mini Greenham. So she insisted on cooking on the fire the fireplace with a big black kettle.
Indoors,
yeah. Wasn't interested in having electricity or anything else. And it was literally like walking into Orange Gate, but indoors on a council estate in East London. So she very much was institutionalised. But she was a laugh and she was a very wonderful person. So, yeah, I hope she's doing well.
Yeah, well, she may have had a story collected.
She might have done, I hope so.
Might lead to some reunions, you know.
Well, interestingly, a woman who I've met more recently is an ex-Greenham woman, and she has opened me up to a few other people on a Facebook page of some ex-Greenham women, and I'm beginning to put together memories and names. So hopefully I will be meeting up with some other people at some point soon.
Fantastic.
Which is great. So, yeah.
Well, that's all good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, would you say that it was... It shaped you, the experience of, from 15 years old joining CND. I think this has made you Greenham and the activism.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Because I think it taught me from a very young age that you can, with the support of people, like-minded people around you, you can be really brave. You can stand up and you can make a difference. And despite other people insulting you or disparaging you, as long as you believe what you're doing right, you're doing is right, you can just get on with it and make a difference. And that has shaped me massively. Yeah. Gave me an awful lot of confidence. And an awful lot of belief in what women can do. Yeah.
It's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, just the... day-to-day living at Greenham, sort of week in, week out. I mean, I know you had other homes as well.
Mm.
Sort of, did you have any special recipes that you associate with Greenham? Any food that you...
Ooh.
What would you eat there?
I can't really remember what we ate. I mean...
I remember baked beans.
Yeah, I think it was baked beans, baked potatoes from the fire. There was a lot of baked potatoes and silver foil from the fire.
Yeah.
An awful lot of lovely cake that people would bring for us.
Oh, yeah, they'd bake and bring.
Yeah. Soup, quite a lot of soup.
Did you make that? Sometimes
we did. We'd make stews and stuff on the fire. We didn't do an awful lot of cooking, to tell the truth, from what I remember. I don't think we were great at... We sort of cook some breakfast and,
yeah.
And there's no great cuisine going on at Orange Gate from what I remember. Or if there was, it wasn't interesting to me at the time. It probably would be more interesting to me now. Yeah. I was much more interested in when the wine was coming. And
well, obviously, what about like drugs and alcohol?
We did have our fair. We had a bit of drinking going on.
Yeah.
I didn't take any drugs at Greenham.
Mm-hmm.
Never did.
Nice spliff.
Yeah. I guess there was spliff going on, but it wasn't a big part of my experience at Greenham.
With drugs there.
There may well have been at other gates.
I
didn't hear about it.
No.
It didn't seem to be a problem.
And did alcohol ever become a problem for anyone?
No.
Not even at Blue?
It was certainly known as the hard drinking gate.
But
whether it became a problem is not something I'm aware of. I don't think it did.
There's no fighting, no...
No. There was, you know, people stumbling around, falling over, that sort of thing. But I don't think there was any massive falling out. Well, women don't tend to fight each other when they're drunk.
No,
men might do, but women don't tend to start punching each other.
They can cuddle each other.
Exactly, yeah, fall into bed with each other maybe, but it's the worst that could happen. And it kept you warm.
Yes. Well, it was one way of keeping warm at night.
Exactly, I know, yeah.
Well, Oh, and, you know, creatively, we remember all those coloured webs on the things.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of knitting went on.
Yes.
I did a lot of knitting.
Did you know how to knit before you went there?
I did.
You did, yeah.
I did know how to knit, yeah. But there was some... Oh, I remember now, yeah, making jumpers with women's symbols on and spending ages working out the... making up the patterns on that sort of tiny square graph paper and following... Yes, I remember doing that.
Great.
That's the first time I've remembered that in decades. Black and purple.
A women's jumper.
Women's symbol jumper, yeah.
So you were doing, like... knitting there. And
yeah.
Did you do any artwork on the fence, or did you just...
I didn't, no. But lots of other people did.
They did, didn't
yeah.
They?
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on. There was an awful lot of singing.
Oh, yes.
And
we've got a few songs
yeah.
in the bag from
Helen,
yeah.
from various people. Though I remember this woman, Jill, singing and just having amazing songs, but I don't remember what any of them were, sadly.
Hopefully going to collect some of them next round.
Yeah,
absolutely. There's time to research that.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of singing around the fire at night. And it was lovely, yeah.
Fascinating time to be part of it. A great time to be have your formative years somewhere like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I was talking to a younger girl today, to Lily, who's...
Well, she's the same age as you were when you first went.
And she's saying how much she wishes she'd been alive then because it's so inspiring. It's quite interesting.
Yes.
So there's an awful lot going on now as well, but I guess it's less women-based, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. But now women are more heard, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we took some time out, perhaps, to find a voice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, certainly when I came back to London, because I was involved in... mainly squatters' politics, politics around housing, squatting, anarchism, those sorts of things. And I certainly had way more confidence about activism and talking than I would have done if I hadn't been a Greenham.
Yeah.
That is absolutely without doubt.
It's empowering.
Mm,
That's awesome, isn't it?
Because it was quite a male movement in some ways.
Yeah.
And a lot of the practical stuff around, you know...
Oh, God.
Fixing up a squat and doing the locks, and I just thought, well, you know, I've built fires, cut through fences, you know, done quite a lot of practical things at Greenham. I can do this. And very, very quickly I was learning how to do plumbing and electrics and carpentry and change locks, and
you were awesome,
that felt
dude.
Good. Well, lots of other women were as well.
Yeah.
There was a real emergence, I think, in the 80s of women in manual trades.
Yes.
And there was a lot of organisations really, really encouraging that.
And do you think that was one of the legacies of Greenham?
I think it probably was.
We could manage, we didn't have
to. Yeah,
we could do stuff.
Yeah.
We could do jobs.
Yes, absolutely. We could live quite independently, quite happily, without having to call in a man.
Yeah.
And things like, I guess, car mechanics as well.
Course,
you know, a lot
yeah.
of the women at Greenham were doing their own car mechanics. They weren't calling in men to mend their vans, they were doing it themselves. Not that it's something I've ever learned how to do, but...
Yeah. I was trying to remember what happened when the bailiffs were coming to our house. Do you remember that? And they were going to take everything but the cooker. Do you remember that?
Hey, was that for one of my finds?
Probably.
It might have been from a Greenham fine. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Is that, how did we stop them?
I think you might have paid it.
I think...
you felt sorry for me.
I think it was actually that lovely American woman... Who paid it? Donna. Yes, I think she paid that fine.
Did she?
Yes.
Oh.
To stop us going to prison again.